Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on Monday. You're listening to 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. We've got some headlines from the weekend, including that terrible fire in Oakland. More details about that. The latest Italian vote shows that Europe is in more turmoil, and a snack that can help fight disease. That and more information on today's Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here at 101.3. We're KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. This is Trumpet Radio Live, the Monday edition. Nobody likes, you know, the Monday, getting out of bed after the weekend, and especially when it gets to be wintertime and it's cold. You've got that little warm cocoon in your bed. You don't want to get up. You want to stay in there, but you have to. We did.
We myself, go to work. Yeah. We always just go to work.
Grant Turgeon with me here today, Dwight Falk also. Yeah, you got to do that at some point. We've got an interesting story later about what they're doing at some college campuses to try to help relieve the stress of final exams. And in the write-up at the end, they said, when you get into the work world, they do nothing. You just go to work. So, same thing for Mondays. There's no special pat on the back. You just get out there.
Right, you have to submit to the taskmaster in the real world. You can't just have your pillows and cookies.
So we've got an interesting list about some things. I think it does include pillows and cookies, actually.
That's just a total guess, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's on there.
It's close. We've got a lot to talk about today. You can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to at kpcg.fm, and we'd like to send out a few links about our program and keep you up to date. Also, if you'd like to send any comments, please send those to comments@kpcg.fm. Over the weekend, one of the big stories, of course, was this fatal warehouse fire in Oakland. I think the death toll is, it's in the 30s. They keep searching and finding more bodies there. Really weird deal. It's a warehouse. They called it the ghost ship, right? And it was like some sort of a setting for these artists. I don't know what they were doing, but they had parties in there. People were living in there, apparently. It was very unsafe, and then it catches on fire and kills quite a few.
Yeah, it does seem like a pretty strange situation there, because I saw some pictures of the building and it looked like it had all this graffiti on the outside. It was really old and suspicious looking, and apparently they were having a rave in there, whatever that is, a type of party. And I guess something like that could lead to a fire, maybe the rave itself.
Well, they were saying also that, you know, there weren't any fire exits, or they weren't clearly marked. There was a report from a lady that had lived there for a while. Like, they set up like RVs, and some people would live in them and pay rent, but there was no running water, no electricity. So people were running wires all over the place to power their RVs. And so I think it's a situation where people were living there illegally, because it's not a residential space, I don't think. And so they have these get-togethers and these parties, and like you said, this rave. Some of the people that died were younger than 17. So you've got adults, teenagers, all kinds of people there. Seems like a lot of laws are probably being broken. And it ends in tragedy, so they're still searching there for more bodies, 33 or so recovered so far, and it's just kind of one of those weird situations that happens. Fire gets going like that, no sprinkler system, you can't stop it.
Yeah, that's just an odd place to be. That's kind of one of those places you want to avoid, sort of a repurposed old warehouse. You know, that's not the first place I would want to be, at least.
Yeah, it's one of those examples of maybe being at the wrong place,
right,
and something bad happens. But the guy that owns it, he's taken a lot of flack because he had a Facebook post after the fire saying, well, thankfully my family wasn't there. And people were not happy with that, because he's kind of responsible for having this set up in this bad building, And then his Facebook post is, well, I'm glad my family wasn't there. Well, yeah, but some people's were, though. That's so people are not happy with that guy today.
Right. He's enabling a lot of illegal activity. He should show some remorse, at least.
So we'll see what happens there. I think they are looking at a criminal investigation to find out, well, just to see what was going on in that place. So that was a tragic event over the weekend. You know, there's a part in town here, Grant, where if you go down by, for those in the local area, if you go down by Quail Springs Mall, a lot of panhandlers out there. I saw something funny yesterday as I was passing through that area. There was somebody out there dressed in a Santa suit. I think they were associated with a business, trying to get people to come into the business. But they were right next to the panhandlers. And so I thought, wow, that's a bad sign for the economy. You got Santa out there panhandling. Right. He's supposed to be bringing everything, right? And he needs money.
Of all people, he should have all the gifts, right?
But that's the thing. I thought, wow, once you get all those panhandlers out there, you can't tell who's panhandler, who's working for a business. It just makes it kind of a yucky part of town, I think.
It does get pretty confusing. A lot of the sidewalks are getting crowded where they're not necessarily places to walk. They're places for the panhandlers to park themselves.
Every corner now down there. Just within 4 or 5 blocks, every corner just full of different people. So, I don't know. Interesting situation out there, but I thought it was funny to see that guy out there. Because at first, I did think that was part of like his panhandling, and I thought, oh, I think he works for Toys R Us. I'm pretty sure that's what he was doing, but he was in that same area, so it all blends together after a while.
Have you seen that FedEx commercial recently with Santa in the back room, supposedly putting all his gifts on the sleigh, but actually he's just using FedEx to send all the gifts?
He can't get up on it. He's like, by myself.
He's like, these are the gifts I send by myself. By myself.
Can't get up there. Yeah. So anyway, it's sort of interesting to see what happens once you start getting panhandlers out there. It's hard to stop it. It's a tough problem to stop. What do? You know, arrest them, and they come right back. So,
give them a house, it's kind of hard to do that too.
Yeah, or, well, like happened out in California, there was that sting operation a while ago, and they found out that it was a job for a lot of them, and a coordinated job. They were renting rental cars to drive to different areas and panhandle. So you never know if they really need help or if it's just kind of a money-making scheme.
Yeah, you can never tell who to trust anymore. It is sad because some of those people probably genuinely need some sort of pity or a good deed to be done toward them, but others, they just are taking advantage of people's kind-heartedness.
You see that in every big city, pretty much, in America, or around the world, I guess, a lot of different places. Hey, you know, when I was in Dublin, Ireland, the thing I appreciated there was I didn't see a lot of panhandlers. There were street performers. And they were looking to get, that was their living. But at least they were doing something kind of neat. Like, there was a lady playing the harp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she had her case out. And then there was a guy on stilts. And he came by and he put his arms out because he wanted to pick up my son and carry him around. And I was like, gee, I guess that's okay. So he did it and then put him back down. And I gave him a couple of euros. So I thought, well,
that's great.
I think this is how this works. Like, I'm not sure. But I kept an eye on him. I'm like, you're coming back, right? Because nothing was said. It was just kind of understood. Like, I'm going to walk him around the block and then I'll...
He starts scampering away.
Yeah.
You never realized someone on stilts could be so fast.
That tall man on stilts. Yeah. So I don't know if my son liked it or not. He just kind of looked at me like, what's happening?
That's pretty strange. At least they're earning their pay, though.
Yeah, they're doing something. It's entertaining in some way. So maybe that's... Well, that would get you a lot of attention, wouldn't it, if you were a panhandler on stilts? I would notice that guy.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say, look at that really tall one on the stilts.
That would make my day, honestly.
Give him some money. We were talking a little bit before we came on the air about the football over the weekend, and the Bills lost, had a rough one. Packers won, but we're still both teams 6-6, so we're kind of in the mix, I guess, somewhat. Well, everyone's favorite quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, had a bad day, a historically bad day. This is from the Daily Caller. It says, dictator sympathizing quarterback Colin Kaepernick finishes games with more sacks and passing yards.
Wow.
First time in NFL history. He was sacked 5 times, and he only completed 1 pass for 4 yards. And he played 3 quarters before he got benched.
What?
Yeah. I could put up those numbers.
Yeah.
Like,
you
right
really,
now.
You really could.
Yeah. In khakis and loafers, I think. I'll just throw a quick out route.
How many passes did he attempt if he only completed 1?
1 of 5.
Okay, so they were trying to run the ball a lot, I guess.
Apparently, yeah. So that I think that they said it's the first time in NFL history that there was a quarterback was sacked more than he had passing yards. So
wow.
5 sacks, 4 passing yards. So he's going into the record books. One of the commenters said, "You know what? He'd been better off just taking a knee."
Yeah, don't get hit, you still lose the same amount of yards, pretty much.
Yeah, well, yeah, he would have probably actually had better yardage if he had just kneeled down every time. Of course, a reference to his kneeling for the anthem there. They were taking a little shot at him. So whenever you set yourself out there as really kind of an antagonist, and people are always watching, if you have bad games, they're quick to point it out.
Well, yeah, that headline that's talking about how he's a dictator sympathizer has nothing to do with the actual game, but people will always call back to the thing they disagree with whenever he fails. That's just his reality now.
Yeah, he's going to have a hard time staying in the league because he's not playing great. He had played okay before this, but not playing super great. And an agitator, and that's teams don't want that. They don't want agitators. They want winners. And
right.
So we'll see if he's gets another contract after this next one expires or he's cut or whatever they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fairness, at least his entire team is bad. He doesn't have any help whatsoever. They've lost 11 straight games, and he wasn't even playing in probably about half of those. So clearly, the team itself is bad too.
Yeah, he's not on a good one there. Here's kind of a neat story. This is from over the weekend, I think it was. A woman delivers a baby on Orlando-bound flight. So if you're ever – this happens sometimes, I guess. This is on Southwest Airlines. A Southwest Airlines plane makes emergency landing in South Carolina. Airline spokeswoman Melissa Ford said flight 556 was on its way from Philadelphia to Orlando on Sunday when a woman went into labor. Maybe she was trying to get the baby to Disney World. That'd be born in Disney World. The plane made an emergency landing in Charleston, South Carolina. Ford said medical personnel who were on the flight helped with the delivery. The new mother and her family were taken to an area hospital when the plane landed. Officials said the flight and the remaining passengers arrived in Orlando just over an hour behind schedule. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Deliver a baby, you're only about an hour behind schedule. I thought they should change their slogan to "We deliver every time." Southwest Airlines.
Yeah, they just bring nurses and doctors along with them every time.
You got to be trained. You got to know what you're doing if you're a flight attendant. You know, they said one of the hardest things about that job is the security measures. Like, you have to learn all the security protocol. What do you do if, you know, something happens? And it's not like the toughest part is handing out the drinks or whatever. It's dealing with all this other stuff. So you have to respect the fact that they know how to do that. They don't panic, and they could help deliver a baby way up there in the air.
And they have to be capable of saving lives, like you said, because most of the people, when those instructions are delivered, are not really paying attention to, you know, what they should do if the plane lands in the water, or how to breathe if the cabin is breached somehow. So really, the flight attendants feel responsible for probably everyone, I'm guessing.
You ever been in the emergency seat, you know, where they ask you, like, hey, if something goes on, are you willing to open this door and help? And you say, yeah, whatever. You know, you're not really, in most cases, paying attention. But I've sat in that seat before, and I've looked at that door and thought, could I open it right now? Like, I don't want to, obviously. But I just thought, did you just pull that lever like the door blows off the plane? There's got to be something else to it.
Hopefully, yeah, because what if some crazy person decided to open that during the flight?
Yeah.
That would pretty much, I mean, it would cause the plane to have some trouble even if it didn't make it crash.
Sure, yeah, you wouldn't want that to happen. So I have looked at that before and thought, would it really be that simple? Because it's got the arrow, you know, pull it up and mm-hmm. pull it this way. But I'm assuming there's some other safety mechanism.
Hopefully the pilot has to push a button inside the cockpit first.
Something, yeah, because that's a lot of pressure for me to handle. I just bought a regular ticket here. I'm not trained to open these doors. Here's a recall for you. You might want to pay attention to this, especially in Oklahoma, I guess, and the surrounding area. National Steak and Poultry recalls nearly 2 million pounds of chicken. As says, after initially recalling 17,349 pounds of chicken, Oklahoma-based National Steak and Poultry has expanded its announcement to include an additional almost 2 million pounds of ready-to-eat chicken that may be undercooked. So this is the ready-to-eat variety. The recall includes a variety of ready-to-eat chicken products that were produced on various dates from August 20th through November 30th, 2016. The full list of additionally recalled products can be found at a link at the story at foxnews.com. So if you think you might have bought some of that and haven't eaten it yet, check. If you've eaten it, ignore it. Don't want to worry about it. The company made the initial recall after a food service customer made a complaint on November 28th that the product appeared undercooked. that's a bad deal. You don't want undercooked chicken. That can kill you.
Yeah, salmonella, other viruses can be in the meat if it's not cooked well. I wonder what they're going to do once they recall it. If they're just going to throw it all out, how about they just send it to me, send it to you, and we'll just
check it.
We'll just cook it a little bit more and then have it. How about that?
2 million pounds of chicken on your doorstep.
A lifetime worth of free meals.
Yeah, you'd have to freeze it. I don't think we can eat it all this week. We'll have some leftovers. According to the news release, there have been no confirmed reports of adverse health effects or illness. Thankfully, consumers who purchase the recalled product should throw the product away, they say, or return to the place of purchase. So, if you bought some of that, you might want to look at it and see if it's, I guess just return it or whatever. Get your money back. You don't want to take a chance on the ready-to-eat chicken that is not ready to eat. They should ready-to-eat probably.
Ready-to-eat if we cooked it well enough. Yeah.
We hope we've cooked it well enough, but we're not sure. So that happens.
Is it impossible though for the person who buys it to just cook it a little bit more?
I am not sure. That's a good question, and I'm not sure exactly what the deal is there. You never see a recall for overcooked chicken. That doesn't happen too often. Although that should happen sometimes too.
I'm sure they make apologies at least. Like if a bunch of people are upset.
Sorry, it's overcooked. It won't kill you, but it's just dry. You might want to get your money back. Here's a better story as far as health is concerned. This is from The Express. Eat nuts, they say, to live longer. Doctors say nuts should be prescribed to fight killer diseases. It's a good snack. You like to have pistachios and such?
It's not my first choice, but I don't turn them down.
I won't turn them down. They say you just need a one-ounce portion. That's enough to slash the risk of heart disease, cancer, and even obesity. Analysis suggests even a small daily serving cuts the risk of coronary heart disease by 30%, cancer by 15%, and premature death by 22%. It can also have the risk of respiratory disease and reduces diabetes by nearly 40%. They say nuts are considered a superfood because they possess anti-inflammatory qualities and are also high in protein and fiber. So, but you don't want to eat too much of it, I guess. Like anything, they say all you need is about 1 ounce.
Well, I'm sold. That sounds like it's worth doing.
They say researchers analyzed 29 global studies involving 819,000 people, so that's a pretty good sample size, including 12,000 cases of coronary heart disease, 9,000 cases of stroke, 18,000 cases of cardiovascular disease and cancer, and 85,000 deaths. To assess the link between nuts and improved health, they say some nuts, particularly walnuts and pecan nuts. Pecan,
if you're from the deep south.
Pecan are also high in antioxidants, which can fight stress and possibly reduce cancer risk. So if you're stressed out, relax, chew on some nuts, they say. It's good for you.
Good deal. I'm going to get some after this show.
Yep. They're high in fat, they say, but good fiber and protein there as well. So if you don't eat too many of them, you're probably fine. I don't think we have an obesity problem because of walnuts.
No.
I don't think that's causing the epidemic we see. I could just walk away from those walnuts. But
I wonder if people did get obese from walnuts, if it would be like a different kind of fatness, like a more healthy, robust fatness.
Yeah. That'd be interesting to see. It's probably true. Like, you're fat, but you look like a healthy fat.
You look like a cheerful plump.
It's a good fat, yeah. So anyway, they say only 1 ounce is all you need. If you have more than that, it doesn't necessarily help reduce the potential illnesses, but it will give you more calories. So I guess that's not great if you have more than an ounce. No need for that. They say, as one commenter here says, I ought to live to be 100 then. Donuts are my favorite.
Brilliant.
That's the wrong type of nut. Not that. I always think that's funny how because they spelled donuts different ways at different stores, and sometimes it looks like do not
really. There, it's a message right within the product.
Should I have the donut? Do not.
I never thought of it that way.
It's already they spell them different. You know, different stores have their ways of spelling them. You drive by them, you're like, wow, that's an interesting way of spelling donuts. It's different, I guess. But this one is just D-O. Well, this guy spelled it D-O-N-U-T-S, of course, for the nuts part of it. So, of course, this story, the next one's happening. Sanctuary campus supporters willing to ignore other laws. They did this video where they asked students at George Washington University, site of a recent walkout, to demand a sanctuary campus to protect illegal immigrant students. And they say they favor defiance of other federal laws, too. So no surprise. These students say, look, we want all these illegals to be safe here. But you know what? We kind of want to break a lot of other laws, too.
That's the slippery slope of lawbreaking. It's always a fact, pretty much, whenever people say they're going to pick and choose which laws they keep in whatever area of life it might be, they end up picking very few laws to actually keep, but they pick a lot that they won't keep.
That's right. That's a very good point. Several students said they would like to make the campus a sanctuary from other things like student loan debt, while others favored exemptions from underage drinking laws. Let the illegals stay. We don't want to pay anything for school, and we want to drink. That sounds good. That sounds like a winning formula.
Yeah, it's pretty simple to avoid the student loan debt, at least. Just don't go to college if you don't have the money for it. I mean, people are trying to deal with the effects every time instead of the cause. You know, oh, the illegals are already here. Let them stay. Maybe we shouldn't have let them come in the first place, and then we wouldn't even have this issue.
Right. Yeah, if you don't have a ton of student debt, then you don't have to worry about it. Some students even felt that they should be given a pass on final exams due to the stress of the election, explaining that, quote, it's really hard to focus on your studies when there's so much else going on. Come in for the test, the professor's like, you prepared? Nah, there was a lot else going on. Oh, no problem. Carry on. Go on your way. And by the way, that student debt, forget about it. And here's a Budweiser.
Incredible. Well, the professor's probably weeping in the corner anyway over the election because it seems like every professor in America now is a flaming liberal.
Yes, there's a lot of that going on for sure. So kind of an interesting look at how just some of the students think. You know, they talk like they're really very passionate about the illegals, but they're really passionate about just doing what they want. That's what it is. It's law breaking. No matter what the law is.
Where does the law breaking stop? I mean, it just, maybe they can start enforcing other ridiculous laws like they are doing about different free speech restrictions and certain equality measures that aren't really equal for all people. Like if you don't support homosexuality or homosexual marriage, then you still have to get in line. That's what we're seeing, is people basically flouting other federal laws while trying to enforce new ones that no one likes.
Yeah, and it's interesting because and very often they're against the U.S., they're against democracy. They could go to Iran. There's a video out there at Heat Street of Iran's morality police. That's a thing, I guess. They arrested a woman for violating Islamic dress code. And so they might want to think about that, because sometimes they get upset about dress code or this or that or the other. Well, Iran's got a way of dealing with that. They'll put you in a safe space, too. It's called jail. So it's just interesting to look at some of the things they protest against, and yet you look at the alternative, Iran or someplace like that, and they're not going to let you protest. You'll be shut down.
It's interesting, too, with these students. Mr. Armstrong wrote about how there were never any protests on the Ambassador College campus, Mr. Herbert Armstrong, and basically he was saying it's because we have hope in our lives. We have a vision of what we're going toward. A lot of these kids just have a really overpowering sense of hopelessness, and so they're not focused on anything important, and therefore they can go and pursue other things that are a lot less important.
Yeah, it's really, I guess, in a lot of cases, what they would term affluenza, which is where kids have money or they have access to things, school, but they're still missing some of the basic things they need in life. Parental attention, support, discipline, etc. And so just because they have more stuff, it doesn't make their problems go away. It actually exacerbates them in a lot of cases because they're still missing the basic law in their life. And so that's what you see on these college campuses in a lot of cases.
Right. And Mr. Armstrong also wrote about how the spark of ambition oftentimes never gets lit in certain people like he had when he was 16. And that is a big problem, too. A lot of these kids don't really have something that they're passionate about, at least in a good way. They don't have the right goal and they're not passionate about the right things. So they're instead putting their energy into not learning in school and enforcing laws that no one likes or getting rid of all the laws they don't like. Those are really worthless pursuits when there are so many better things in life to go after.
Some of the universities are trying to help their students cope with the stress of final exams, and those can be a stressful time, you know, like the rest of life as well. So here are some of the things that different colleges are trying. They're doing one is doing a theme of Pirates of the Caribbean in a pool. The University of Mary Washington offered a study break this weekend where students could float in the school pool while watching the movie Pirates of the Caribbean. So, not sure what that helps in any way.
You know, a good way to cope with the stress of big exams is to have breaks from school in the middle of the semester and a huge break at the end of the semester, and then also a gigantic summer break. Oh, wait, we already have all of those things. There are plenty of off times from the hard grind of education, but we need more apparently.
Well, the thing that always helped me combat stress was to be ready for the test. I never worried about it if I was ready. Now, if I wasn't ready, which did happen sometimes, I was worried about it. I was stressed because I wasn't ready. But I never went in where I was ready and thought, oh, this is, you know, disaster. I thought, bring it on. I'm going to get this thing done. The Shoreline Community College, they have a thing called a Marshmallow Spaghetti Tower. And there's no details about what that is. But
I think I've seen that. I think it's talking about hardened noodles, and then you have marshmallows that you stick in as the joints of the building, and you just build a tower with them.
Oh, well, there you go. It's kind of, they're learning about architecture and building,
right.
Apparently. So that's the thing that's supposed to relieve some stress. Some schools have therapy dogs. They say, do finals have you feeling like you're the underdog? Well, we have the solution that should put you back on top of the pack. Therapy dogs are back. Sounds like a rap song. That's the announcement from the University of Colorado at Boulder. I bring my therapy dog to class. If he's got the answers on him, then that would help me. hide it in his fur. Two barks for yes, one bark for no. We went over this.
Dog's just disrupting class, but actually giving you the answers.
He's giving me the answers. He's a therapy dog. Miniature horses. There's miniature horses at the University of Northwestern. So you can have a miniature horse help you out.
Wow.
It says they're cute, they're fuzzy, they're mini. Miniature horses are the best way to relieve final stress. I'm not really sure what they do with them, if they just you hang out with them for a while. Or I like miniature horses. They are neat. I never looked at a miniature horse, though, and thought, boy, I could sure want to use one of those for my exam.
Do you ride them while you take the exam?
I don't know. Unless I was going to be a veterinarian, then maybe that would help out. But miniature horses relieve the stress. Hey, you got an F, buddy, but look at that miniature horse over there.
Oh, I feel better now.
I feel much better. That's all I'll be able to afford it. Not the big one, the miniature one. I think they're probably more expensive. They're kind of a novelty.
Yeah, it's pretty clear here that the students are looking in all the wrong places for answers. Seriously, you're going back to kindergarten playtime to try and find an answer for your stress or a relief for your stress?
I bet the universities feel like they have to do this to attract students. You know, they're like, well, I'm not going to go to your school. They've got the spaghetti tower with the marshmallows. I'll go to that one. Another one here, Wichita State. They've got a bubble wrap wall where you can take out your finals frustrations.
Nice.
You go up and pop the bubble wrap, I guess, which is fun and irritating at the same time. You can go to the University of Nebraska, Omaha. They have a balloon ball pit, just like, I guess, the fun places in McDonald's where you can crawl around in those.
That's pretty amazing.
I will say, though, I've heard those places are filthy.
Oh, yeah.
Because kids and adults drop things inadvertently, or, you know, sometimes kids do things in there they shouldn't do, and it's all in the ball pit. So think about that, University of Nebraska, Omaha. Pop-up books, University's library will be pulling special pop-up books out of its special collection, to comfort overwhelmed students. If you're overwhelmed, you go get a pop-up book. You could take it over to the popping wall. You could do both of them. You could pop the things and look at the pop-up book and then jump in the ball pit. All on a miniature horse.
So this whole story's real? It's not what they call fake news?
No, this is all real. This is what they're doing at some of these. This is takeoff on Build-A-Bear, I guess. You can build your own stuffed animals. University of Wyoming is hosting an entire event dedicated to de-stressing around finals. Students can build their own stuffed animals, play dodgeball, and watch Disney Channel original movies. Thumb-sucking discouraged, but not forbidden, they say.
So now they're even openly mocking the kids who choose these options, and the kids are still going for it.
Yeah, I guess so. And this one's not fair. This is Wayne State University, a girls-only dance party. How come the guys can't go?
discriminatory.
Yeah, they say ladies, sisters, women, you can go dance in a safe women's-only environment.
Here's the problem, though. What if men identify as women?
Ah.
Then you can get in. If you identify as a woman that day.
That's a very good point.
There's finally. No, there's no keeping out the men if they will stoop to a certain level.
That's true. The last one here they have listed, Florida State University's libraries have planned a Harry Potter-themed calendar of events. Attendees can play games including Wizard's Chess and Quidditch Ring Toss, make pretzel wands, and build Hogwarts out of Legos. Well, there you go. We never did any of that stuff when I was in school. Maybe they hadn't. I just wasn't aware of it. I remember we played basketball. That was a good de-stressor.
Right.
Ran around a little bit.
It's a normal thing to do is get some exercise and run off some of the pent-up energy.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Why not do that anymore?
Right. Well, they did have dodgeball at one of them.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. The dodgeball's fine, but yeah.
The bubble wrap wall if you want to take some punches.
A little bizarre. A little bizarre, but in some of the things that are going on at those universities. The Key of David program's coming up today. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here on 101.3. And Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England today. Variety of topics. Talks about Washington's giving youth offenders a second chance. It's one of the laws on the books. In most cases, they commit more crimes, oftentimes violent, when they're given that second chance. Pretty interesting story there. And he also talked about how the Russian-made Jeep carrying the ashes of the late Cuban dictator Fidel Castro broke down in the middle of his funeral procession on Saturday, forcing soldiers to push the vehicle until it could be repaired. The perfect, perfect summation of Fidel Castro's reign, the broken-down Jeep from the 1950s.
The typical communist regime, I guess, vehicle there.
Nothing will stop us now. Engine cuts out. Someone push this thing for me. That's just very interesting. So a lot more topics also talked about on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury, listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. Email us, comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Blondeau here today. Big weekend in Europe, Abraham. Wall Street Journal, Italian Prime Minister Renzi's resignation will usher in a period of uncertainty. What happened over there?
Yeah, so over the weekend, Italy held a referendum asking about widespread constitutional reform, and basically this reform would remove a lot of power from the Senate and create a more directly elected legislative assembly, which would be able to make change easier for laws and different things like that. And this was Matteo Renzi's goal. He's been really trying to get rid of the corruption and bureaucracy in Italy that's famous for, mm-hmm. with Berlusconi there and everything he did when he was in office. And Italy just has a poor reputation for everything taking forever to be passed in Parliament, and it results in a lot of economic stagnation. And so this was his big bid to pass these sweeping reforms, but 60% of the Italian people said no, and so he resigned from office, which is a big blow, because this is another upset of the status quo in Europe. And so he's out of the picture, and Italy will have to scramble to create a caretaker government now.
So I don't know a whole lot about Renzi. Was he considered sort of a globalist in the same vein as, say, like President Obama or Angela Merkel, where they were looking to globalize everything? Was he considered to be sort of like that, or was he a different type of leader?
I don't think he'd be considered a globalist, but he did try to work hard to stay in the status quo of the European Union. So Angela Merkel, she liked Renzi, and she appreciated everything he was trying to do inside of Italy. And so she says with regret that he's leaving at this stage, because he was, Italy's one of the major pillars of the EU. And so with his change and them not really knowing who the next leader will be, it does create this uncertainty, especially with Italy in the midst of a big banking crisis. It does create a lot of complexity in for the EU in trying to stabilize the euro.
And so he's talking about stepping down immediately, or is he going to hang on for a little while?
He's going to step down immediately. It's pretty much the same thing we saw in Brexit with David Cameron stepping down within a very short time.
Yeah.
After losing that referendum. And a lot of analysts, they've been showing a picture of the last meeting between world leaders. It's a picture of Barack Obama, David Cameron, Angela Merkel, Matteo Renzi, and Francois Hollande. Mm. And Angela Merkel is the only one that's going to be left in 2017 or around that. Everyone else is exiting the picture.
Yeah, I saw a headline related to that, and it said, I think, like, in one remains or something, and it was Angela Merkel. And so, you know, for now, right? I mean, even if, let's say, she wins an election or whatever, maybe she doesn't want to stay around. You know, maybe she sees all of her peers sort of politically just going away, and maybe she says, hey, it's time, you know?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because these are the minds of the people who are the architects behind how the world has functioned for the past 4 years at least, some dating back to 8 years or even 10 years. And so when you have all these minds leaving the picture and you're having a new wave of politicians, some are contrarian to those views, others wanting to stay around the same area or follow the same path. But so you're having a new wave of leaders come in, which was normal. Usually we have new leaders in governments. But we're at a particular turning point in the world where we have a lot of different globalist organizations, as you mentioned, and the direction of them will depend a lot on these new leaders. And it's with the rise of populism and nationalism, those are under threat. And so that could really disrupt the world picture very, very quickly.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, if you had, let's say, gone off the grid, as they say, and not paid attention to the news for, 6 months? Like, the whole world's changed when you come back. Like, almost the entire world. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing to see all these leaders who were very stable. It seemed like they had everything going for them. I mean, David Cameron had a huge majority in Parliament, and all of a sudden he's out of the picture. President Obama, I mean, everyone knew there was the election coming, but Donald Trump was the last thought to be elected.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were talking, you remember, before he got elected, they were talking about the death of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's over for them, you know, completely, and then he wins. Yeah.
Yeah, and they control both houses and perhaps the Supreme Court, too.
And which party is dying now, it seems like, when the Democrats have been widely rejected in all forms of American government?
Not according to Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, she says everything's just fine. The American people don't want a new direction.
Yeah, she says they don't want a new direction after they've voted for a completely new direction. So she's a little off base there.
Yeah, a little maybe in denial. Then we've seen in France, Francois Hollande fall to 4% and probably a right-wing leader coming in, which will change France in a completely new direction. And in Italy here, we're seeing a new change as well. And Italy is not a major world player, but the main significance they have is that besides housing the Vatican, which has political clout, it's that their banking system weighs Europe down a lot. And since they're one of the core Euro members involved in the Euro, what happens in Italy can affect the rest of Europe very significantly in the realm of economics. So this next leader, he either has to fall in line with Germany, as Renzi has done with Merkel, or he'll have to do what Greece did, or try to do anyway, and try to find a new path, which usually ends up in Germany dominating you anyway.
I saw a little piece on Renzi a couple weeks ago on 60 Minutes before, you know, with this vote coming up, and they were really, I don't know, they're putting him in a pretty good light. I mean, if just based on that piece, which is, you know, kind of all I really knew about him, you'd think he'd win. I mean, you'd think like, oh yeah, he's going to be this great leader because that's kind of the way they built it up. And so that surprised me when I saw that how much he lost by too. It wasn't even close. And he admitted that when he came out and said, yeah, the people have spoken. So
yeah, I think it is surprising, especially for Italy, which has had a history of corrupt leaders. He has done a very good job in the shadow of that legacy. But also, it is a decision by the Italian people not to have change to a system of government that breeds inefficiency and bureaucracy. And is a source of a lot of their problems. It's just the way it's structured. So it is interesting that the Italian people chose not to move forward with this system. And a lot of people thought the main fear was that it would give executives too much power and would give them more power to legislate than right now the Senate has all the power in Italy, or most of it, to make laws. And so they were a little skeptical of that. And that's probably, at least that's what they're saying right now, was the main reason why, is they were with seeing these other populist leaders being elected or gaining power. They were fearful of creating a new constitution where it gives the executives more power, and it could, because it could pave the way for someone who is corrupt to just dominate the system, much like Mussolini did in the 1920s.
That's very interesting. Definitely a lot of just turmoil and change just all around the world, and different nations handling it different ways, I guess. I mean, people just want solutions to the problems that they see, and everyone's still hoping they can get in whatever system of government they feel is best to solve it. You know, that's, I think, what happened here in the U.S. People just wanted to see the problem solved. I guess the U.K. got sick of Europe, felt like they were being held back or whatever. And so people just want their problems solved economically, immigration, whatever. And so people are just, they're really turning over the normal leadership, you know, that the status quo, in hopes of some change or some solution. So people do it in different ways and they vote different ways, but I think they just feel like, hey, we need some changes around here to get things back on track. So good luck.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's I remember reading a letter, or it's a diary entry of Harry Truman near when he left office, and he was just going through the history of the United States and how there's a system where there's a swing left of progressive liberals, and then the people want to be, they think it's gone too far, so they have Republicans come in to bring things back to how it used to be. And there's that constant cycle. And that's true in any country. There's a constant cycle of change and then conservatism going back to traditions. And I think in the world we're seeing, after about 10 years of liberalism in the world, we're seeing a change back to conservatism in a huge way around the democracies internationally. But what that's also opening the door for sweeping changes and the erosion of the system that's been in place. And it really is a judgment on that system where it's not really making people's lives better. The world's become more violent and unstable. And so I think, as you mentioned, people, they want to try to find a new, a better system, or to find protection in their governments. And so they're going to the opposite spectrum. Politically, but it's not necessarily going to be a solution for them either.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens. A lot of things changing over there in Europe and a lot of places around the world. A nice haircut, by the way.
Thank you.
Looks real sharp.
Agreed.
Yeah. Abraham came. He didn't even tell it. You didn't even tell me you were going to get a haircut.
Yeah,
it's a surprise.
That must have I must have skipped over that in my daily planner yesterday.
Didn't send out the blast email to everyone?
Yeah.
Just so you know, I'm getting a haircut. I'll be. it looks great. The problems with just the politicians and the politics and all that is affecting the U.S. as well, of course. Grant, you've got a story here from the Los Angeles Times. California's mad. Should California secede politically out of step with the rest of the country? They're an island unto themselves, only they're not an island. But what's going on in California?
Well, this writer started out very objective. He writes for the L.A. Times, but it seems like after a while, his stance as a sad liberal sort of betrayed itself. But at the beginning, it's a pretty good article, I think. It says, this election day, California voters tightened gun control, extended taxes on the rich, hiked cigarette taxes, legalized marijuana, boosted multilingual education, and, of course, provided Hillary Clinton with all of her winning margin of 2 million popular votes and then some in her losing campaign for president. So clearly, that is far more radical left than the rest of the country is willing to stomach right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's that story we talked about last week, or that headline, I think it was from the Washington Post, about, well, why did Trump win? You know, it's just this group of people. Look at these people. Well, why did Hillary Clinton get a majority get the majority vote? Well, look at the people in California. That's why. Mm-hmm. Right? So, I mean, you can look at both groups and think what you want, but there are reasons for each of those outcomes. And people in California, they have a way of thinking that's a little different than the rest of the U.S.
Yes, it's very different, and it's quirky in a way. And there are campaigns for California to secede from the United States, which would go pretty badly for them. Their governor has even said that maybe they should put a wall around the state so that Trump's policies cannot interfere with theirs.
That's so funny, isn't it, how Donald Trump talked about putting a wall down there in the border, and they're outraged, and they're like, that's terrible. We don't need walls. We need bridges. Now we're going to build a wall to keep you out.
It's funny because if they seceded, then I guess it wouldn't go too well for them. I mean, what portion of the military will they have to defend themselves with if the rest of America decided to invade, for example?
Yeah, it would be a bad deal. If they do put a wall up, I hope they don't put it by the ocean. That's the best part of the state. You put it on the wrong side, kept all the dolphins out.
They'll probably put it on three sides to keep the border between Mexico and California open.
Well, that's what you're going to, yeah. I mean, you know, that's what I was thinking. If they became their own group, which I don't think they will, but yeah, it would just be like an extended Mexico, because they would just all flood right into that. So there you go. If you want that, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems insane that they would want this, but there are different people who keep on encouraging it. They keep stoking this movement to possibly secede from the union. This progressive billionaire said, it's impossible to look at the Trump campaign and not see a direct threat to the civil liberties and dignity of California citizens. Now, he says California citizens there, but I've been hearing a lot about the civil rights of illegal immigrants as well, which, I mean, do they really have any if they're not supposed to be here in the first place?
Maybe that's what he means. Maybe he's saying that they're all California citizens if they come there. California dreaming.
Right. There are definitely a lot of areas in this article where some pretty shocking, I guess, liberal viewpoints are brought out. For example, with the illegal immigration, because so many of these workers are an integral part, they're intertwined in their societies, it would really cause a lot of problems for the businesses. I don't see how, because we have a gigantic unemployment rate in this country. Couldn't legal citizens take the jobs of all the illegals if they're deported?
Yeah, for sure. That's always a weird argument to me where they say, well, they're such a major part of the economy. Well, they're not paying taxes. You know, I mean, a lot of cases people get paid with cash, so they don't have to report anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure there's somebody else that could do those jobs. I mean, obviously there is. If they'd be willing to work, I don't know, but no, there's a lot of things that California would look at, and I would think lowering the cost of living would be more helpful to U.S. citizens. They can't afford to live there in a lot of cases because it's so crazy. So there's a lot of things they could fix to make their state more inviting for other people besides illegals.
Yeah, they definitely could try to get this situation right with the illegals. There are at least four big cities in California. I believe it's L.A., Oakland, Sacramento and San Francisco that call themselves sanctuary cities, meaning that they will not help the federal government enforce immigration law there, which really, and we've heard and read a lot about this, it really does encourage illegals to flock there and commit their crimes there because they basically are almost like they're above the law in those areas.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to not enforce the immigration law, what law are you going to enforce? And people know that. I mean, we all know if somebody says something but they're not going to enforce it, that, well, you're not going to be that apt to listen to them or follow what they say because they don't enforce anything.
Right. And there are a lot of other areas besides illegal immigration that really set California apart from much of the country. Obviously, it has a few liberal state allies, but California is a pretty vocal opposer of Donald Trump. For example, climate change is another issue where the California governor even sent a state delegation to a UN climate change conference earlier this month. So because the U.S. may not be sending a delegation, now his state at least is going to stand out and represent itself in the UN.
Well, there you go. It's beautiful weather there. Southern California is great. I wouldn't want that climate changed either. Keep it as it is.
Well, it's interesting because it does remind me of the secession movement in Quebec, which has been going on forever in Canada. Because in Quebec and California are very similar, actually. because culturally they're very different than the rest of their nations they're a part of. Quebec is Catholic, French. Most of Canada is Protestant and English. And Quebec also has a disproportionate amount of political power, and they're in a strategic area in Canada. California is much the same, where they have all the best coastline on the West Coast for the U.S. military. They have like Silicon Valley with Google, Amazon, all the big tech giants. And California's culture, as Grant's been pointing out, is very different than the rest of the United States. So they're both kind of in the similar boat. But I don't think they'll ever succeed for the same reason Quebec never has, and that's because it's not viable for them to stand on their own, to be surrounded by another country, but still be your own existing one. It just, a lot of people, radicals want them to succeed because they think it will be some kind of utopia. But I think everyone realizes that it would just end up terribly.
Well, yeah, you see the same thinking on the college campuses where they want sanctuary campuses. You know, they want to be inside of a system that provides protection for their borders, but then they want to do whatever they want within that. And that just doesn't work. It's funny you said Quebec and California are similar. I was having visions of T-shirts that said, like, Surf Quebec. You don't see a lot of those.
No, you see a lot of T-shirts of things I don't understand because they're in French. Well, I might be able to, but...
You can understand a fourth of it, right?
Yeah, every fourth vowel I can understand French. It is really interesting that even California has a disproportionate amount of political power. I mean, 55 electoral college votes, that's huge. That's I think that's a quarter of everything Hillary Clinton won in the election, or a fifth, fourth or a fifth. But then even in the economy, they used to be in the top 10 economies in the world, just California by itself. But ever since the 80s, they've become more of a curse than a blessing to the United States with all the national disasters, the debt that they have. So, I mean, if they want to succeed, it would probably help the U.S. economy in the long run anyway.
Well, that's what they should tell them. Yeah, go ahead. Just go ahead and pay the bill real quick before you leave. Well, we ain't got it, though.
Then you can't secede. And that's,
we'll take
that
the,
simple.
We'll take the Sacramento Kings. Actually, no, we won't take them. You can keep the Kings.
What team would we really want from there?
Oh, boy, that's a good question.
L.A. Kings.
Yeah,
that's
the
pretty
hockey,
good one.
The hockey team. Dodgers.
Oh, yeah.
Not Golden State.
No. Maybe the Raiders.
We'll leave Golden State.
We'll take
over
the
there.
Fans from the Raiders. The black hole. We were watching a Raiders game the other day.
And
my kids saw the people and they were like, "What's that?" I said, "Oh, those are the black hole fans. They dress like Darth Vader and some sort of like cyborg and whatever." That's a big deal to them.
It's the only reason I need not to like the Raiders. Their fans are just so creepy to me.
That'll be their military when they secede.
Yes.
The black hole.
It's pretty formidable, actually, now that I think of it.
It looks scary, but it's just a 50-year-old man under there.
Under the
out
influence
of
Bud Light.
Yes. Yeah, so are they, I mean, they always talk about seceding, but I mean, is there any actual effort to do anything?
The writer eloquently puts it as in, there's a gonna happen scale, and on that scale, California's seceding is a not, so it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, it's big talk, right? It's like, you legalize marijuana, what happens? A lot of talk, not a lot of action. Once people are involved in that type of environment, they're going to do a lot, but they're not going to do anything.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's just, this whole article is funny because after a while, you can tell this writer's almost about to have a meltdown about the different stances. Also about climate change, he points out that Mr. Trump and congressional Republicans would redirect NASA to focus on science in space, actually going out and exploring space instead of spending money on Earth science. And he said they disdain this, even though it has made crucial contributions to understanding of global warming. That's all the explanation I need to say, NASA, you go back out into space and never do anything else on Earth again.
Yeah, there is value to going out there. And I mean, look at all the satellites and you look at all the, I mean, even the warfare that, not that we've really necessarily totally used that, I guess, I suppose satellites we have, but there is, I mean, whoever conquers space, I mean, you do, you have an advantage, so it is important militarily.
Exactly. Yeah. This writer also talks about healthcare and how if the Affordable Care Act were repealed, the amount of people covered in or the amount of people uninsured in California would soar to about 7.5 million instead of 3.4 million in California. So California in particular has benefited from Obamacare. And this article tries to point out that 90% of people actually have lower prices in their health care than they would have. But what about the other 10% that's paying for everyone else's ailments? Yeah. That's really not fair. It's talking about how, you know, people with diseases would have to pay a lot of money. Yes, because they're a high risk. That's just kind of how it's always been. And you can't really tax the healthy people for the ailments of the sick.
Yeah, it's really a lot of different thinking there in terms of what they think, I guess, in California and other parts of the country. But as like you said, it's not going to happen.
Right.
It doesn't appear like it's going to. So, but it does highlight just the division in the country. There is quite a bit of liberal thinking on the coasts, usually. Why did they take the coasts? So nice out there. And more conservative in the middle. Mm-hmm. Usually that's the way it goes when you look at the electoral map. So, and that's the way it played out, too, with the election. So different thinking there, but probably don't have to worry. California will probably be safe.
probably
going to stay in the U.S. And, you know, and even if they left, so what? You could just go run across the border. They wouldn't have any border control, so
right.
You could still visit. It wouldn't matter. They haven't done anything so far. I don't know why they would do it now. Pretty interesting. You can read the rest of that at the LA Times. Should California secede? How the state is politically out of step with the rest of the country. That'll do it for us on today's edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up here in a bit on 101.3 KPCG.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.